What up, meepsters? This is Ryan Rainbro, and if you're hearing this, that means you're about to listen to one of the 99 free episodes of the Meep Meep Podcast, available wherever you cast pods. But keep in mind that there are new and unreleased episodes of the show on patreon.com/meepmeeppod. So you'll want to sign up there to hear future episodes and also other side projects like Choo Choo, the show about soundtracks, and contribute suggestions for future episodes as well. Will I listen to your suggestion? There's only one way to find out. patreon.com/meepmeeppod. Bye! Welcome to Meep Meep, the Roadrunner podcast, where we go through the albums of Roadrunner Records with the artists who made them and the musicians they influenced. Let's roll! What up, meepsters, and welcome to another edition of Living with a Pod Complex, where we explore albums released on Trustkill Records that were distributed through Roadrunner Records. Today, we're discussing Throwdown's 2005 album, Vendetta, which is a pivotal point in the band's career. You see, a couple years prior, in 2003, they released the album Haymaker, which was their first with formerly guitarist Dave Peters, now vocalist Dave Peters. It was kind of a re-releasing of earlier material, re-recorded, a few new songs, and there was a noticeable difference between the newer songs and the older songs lyrically. But this was going to be Vendetta. 2005's Vendetta was going to be the first time we got to get a brand new set of completely new material with Dave on vocals. But other changes had been made in the band between Haymaker and Vendetta, most notably that former vocalist Keith Barney, who had turned guitarist. They kind of swap places here. It's like wife swap, but with a band member. But I would definitely watch that show. Wife swap with band members or band members swapping each other. And Orange County hardcore pretty much is wife swap with band members, but slightly less racial tensions. So anyway, Keith Barney departs. He goes full-time with 18 Visions. So longtime touring guitarist Matt Mentley comes into the fold as the guitar player. Dom, who had been there since the beginning, he maintains his position as bassist, and then they have a drummer, Ben Dassault, who has since been in other meepin' bands like Madball and things like that. So a nice, solid lineup that solidified for several years throughout. So that's who we're talking to. We're talking to Matt Mentley, who you may remember from being on an episode previously, talking with me about Soulfly's self-titled album. But now we're going to talk about something he did that he took part of, and that is Vendetta by Throwdown. Now, when Vendetta was released, it was kind of seen as quite a divisive record. I don't even want to say polarizing, because it wasn't quite that, but I think that the fact that there were member changes going on, and there had just been a significant change with vocalists, it made people see the band as a completely new entity, which, I mean, it really was. But looking back on Vendetta, even from a personal perspective, when Vendetta first came out, I kind of thought it was a completely different thing. And now, if you go back and listen to 2003's Haymaker and then listen to Vendetta, they're kind of totally natural progressions of each other. Now, the material the band would release after that, 2007's Venom and Tears, 2009's Deathless, most notably, you know, they went definitely in a more metallic direction in the sense of like a groove metal kind of thing. And I'm sure that comes from, as Matt Mentley will tell us here pretty soon, touring with bands of that ilk. But Vendetta is an overlooked album of the time, and I think is more highly regarded now in retrospect. I mean, even myself at the time, I was like, I don't know if this was really what I was looking for. But if you haven't listened to the album in a while, definitely after you're done hearing me and Matt yak about it, give it a shot, because it's really sick and you're definitely going to be the strongest person in your Planet Fitness, the mecca of bodybuilding. But hey, I just listened to the record. All right, let's talk to Matt Mentley, who took part in the record, an album that Dave Peters on the bonus DVD for this album said it was music for you to be a 14-year-old and yell at your parents to.
You're living for one thing. Did you come this far to let life with you and betray your heart?
What happened was, me and Keith were living together, and that's when that split started happening, where it's like, Throwdown was like ready to go full time. I went to Japan with them in February of 04, and I was filling in since like 01. I did the tour with Martyr AD in 01, and that was my first tour. And then I did all these shows. Like, we'd go up to Gilman and I'd play because Tommy was working or Dave was working or in college or whatever it was. And that was when Keith was still singing, obviously. And then even when Dave was started singing, I would fill in for Keith or Tommy because Keith was on with 18 Visions, right? And we were roommates and stuff. And then it got to the point where Keith had tours booked with 18 Visions. So I had to go to, I went to Japan with him. It was 2 weeks we did in Japan. And that's when they sort of asked me like, hey, we want to do this full time. We're all done with school. You want to do it? And I'm like, yeah, let's go. I've been filling in for fucking 3 years. I'm ready, you know? So then that, and then 04, just, that's when things went crazy. But we did, you know, I went home, we did the Forever video, which I was in, even though I didn't record on the record, obviously. But then everything after that was like, yeah, it was like, so when we did these repressings, it says Throwdown is Dave Peters, Dom, me, Tommy still, cause he was still in the band, and Ben on drums. But then it says, you know, all, Keith Barney played guitar on this recording, right? Jared Alexander played drums on this recording. Like, it says who played on the recording, but it says who Throwdown is, which is, they kind of did that obviously as like a, cause like that's who the band was then, right? But then Tommy, of course, quit right after Ozfest. After Japan in 04, we did a spring tour in the US with Most Precious Blood. We did that tour, and that was still as a 4-piece. So we did Japan as a 5-piece, and then with a drummer that he was never in Throwdown more than just playing a few live shows, but he did Japan with us. And then we did the tour with Most Precious Blood. We had the drummer from Scars of Tomorrow at the time play drums for us on that tour. And that was okay. It didn't really go great. We didn't feel like that was going to be a permanent member. So we ended up talking to Ben, and then Ben went with us. Our first tour was Europe in 04. We did like a month in Europe. And then after that was Ozfest. And then at that point we knew Ben was going to be in the band. And then, so Europe, we took Marky, our old drummer from like Beyond Repair and You Don't Have to Be Blood. And he played the second guitar in Europe with us. And then Ozfest, Tommy did that as his kind of last tour. So we were a 5-piece. And then after that, we were a 4-piece for a while, just me on guitar. And then all the tours we did, like after that was when we did Norma Jean, we did Lamb of God, Fear Factory, Children of Bodom. We went back to the UK with Lamb of God and As I Lay Dying. Then after that, we went and wrote Vendetta.
So when you're writing Vendetta, are the four of you that are listed on Vendetta, you, Dom, Dave, Ben, are you the core four people that are writing all these songs? Or are any of these songs coming over from previous members kind of contributing, or it's the four of you writing all?
Yeah. So on Haymaker, that's when there was a mix. There was a lot of mix still of like Keith and actually Dave. I don't know if everyone knows this, but Dave actually wrote Forever, which is like one of the biggest Throwdown songs. Was became our perpetual closing song. We tried to change it for years and never could. We even tried to get This Is Where It Ends, which is on Vendetta, as the closing song, and we could never do it. We like the fans just wouldn't let us not play Forever at the end, I feel like. But yeah, the four of us were, I mean, we started writing stuff in 04, but like on tour kind of writing, you know, where you like, oh, we're doing a sound check and we jam. And so like the ending of Vendetta, for example, the song Vendetta, that like end breakdown whole thing, that was like that spawn from this of me and Ben kind of jamming. Had a sound check in Germany, just that one, that riff, that like kind of down, you know, that kind of ending riff, that double bass pattern thing. And obviously it got developed way more later on, but stuff like that. And then on Ozfest, like we were on a bus for the first time. So like we would jam on the bus, you know, in the back lounge kind of thing. And Dave really took the reins at that point and really is the primary songwriter from that point forward, you know? And once we were like, okay, we got to go write an album and record it. We literally had like 30 days pretty much to write Vendetta. So we had about a month that we were home and had to write it.
And do you feel like it benefits from that urgency, or do you wish that you had more time to work on it?
It's hard to say. At the time, I felt like it was rushed. And it was a whirlwind kind of for me because I was essentially the new guy, you know, as far as the public was concerned, I was the new guitar player. Even though for me, having been friends with those guys since the inception of the band and playing with them, you know, years before that on tour, I didn't feel new, right? Like I didn't feel like this new guitar player in the band. But as far as the recordings went and as far as new songs, I was looked at as like, oh, the new guitar player. Like, I remember reading reviews of Vendetta and going, they're going, oh, yeah, you know, his style is really changing. And it's like, well, it's not, they like, they're, you know, basically blaming me for it as if like, and again, Dave was the primary songwriter going forward once. And I think part of that was like I said, it was new for me, right? Like being in, I was all of a sudden thrown into, I was never in a band that serious. So I was like, wow, like we're writing like an album and this is going to be, you know, at the time, like it was a big deal for me. Like it was the biggest thing I had done, you know, I toured essentially all of Haymaker, but again, I didn't play on the record. So Vendetta, I was definitely intimidated at the outset of like, oh, contributing, like, because the bands I was in prior to that, I was the primary songwriter in a few bands that I had done it when I was younger. But like, I was like intimidated for sure, because I always felt like an, you know, below average guitar player at best, kind of just, you know, I was okay. I was good enough to play things, but I never felt confident. I always struggled with confidence and stuff. So, but yeah, man, I mean, at the time I remember feeling like, man, I wish I had more time and I wish I contributed more and I wish, but, it's the way it had to be, man. I mean, you know, it was going 100 miles an hour. Like we were going, and those days, you know, you didn't have time to like take a year to write a record. So we had to get back on the road, and even the recording of it, we went from writing it. We drove out to Massachusetts, recorded it with Zeus, and then we toured back. Right. I mean, that's how you did it. It's like, oh, we got to tour back to make money. So,
did you feel any sort of pressure being a fan of the band coming in and wanting to make sure that you're maintaining the integrity of the sound that people liked, or was that not even something on your mindset?
I don't think I felt that, because Dom and Dave were the mainstays, right? Like they were still there, and had been in the band for, Dom was, you know, from there from the really beginning, and Dave had been there for, since You Don't Have to Be Blood, or he had been there so long that like I felt confident because they were the main guys in the band at that point, right? They were the leaders of that band essentially at that time, right? So I never felt that pressure. And again, Dave was the primary songwriter on that record, on Vendetta. So I mean, I had never been a part of at that up to that point on a record on somewhat of a major release, not a major label, but you know what I'm saying, a bigger release. I was definitely nervous in that sense, like, wow, this is like going to be a big deal for me, you know. That's how I felt at the time when I was 22 or whatever I was.
Well, did you, as a fan of the band, then still going off of that same perspective, did you feel like it was a jarringly different sound for Throwdown by the time it was done with, or were you just psyched about it? You're psyched to be a part of it. I mean, you're saying, of course, the understandable pressure, but at the same time, it had to be a lot of just excitement on your part. Like you said, this is your first time kind of having a national release. So are you caught up in that you're not worrying about all these other intangibles?
Yeah, I was excited. It didn't feel as much pressure because I had been in the band almost a year at that point officially, right? Like I had been touring, like I said, Japan. We did Tour with Most Precious Blood. We did Ozfest, like big stuff, right? And doing these big metal tours. And so I already felt comfortable in the band at that point. That's what's cool. Like it wasn't like I joined officially and then like, boom, we're writing a record. So at least there was some, and then there was lead up to writing that record. I mean, like I said, we were messing around with some of that stuff on the road over the year prior. So it didn't ever feel like, I didn't feel like a big departure to me. I know it did to people on the outside, but I think that's always the case, right? Like a lot of times people on the outside look at it, oh, like their record from 2 or 3 years ago sounds so much different, but like to the band, it never sounds, I don't feel like it ever sounds that way, because we're the ones that are living it and like writing it as we go. And you know what I'm saying? It's not the same experience. I didn't feel like Venom and Tears was a big departure from Vendetta either. So, you know what I mean? But I know fans did. So.
Well, you know, one thing that I think I've ignorantly always thought is because I hold Keith Barney in such high regard for his guitar playing in 18 Visions and also as a vocalist for Throwdown, that he was like the mastermind writing all these kind of like new metal hardcore riffs on these other albums. But listening to Vendetta, especially recently, the riffs on this album in particular, I think Venom and Tears is a lot different, probably deliberately so, but the riffage really isn't that big of a difference. So is it safe to say that Dave was also contributing? I mean, I know he played guitar in the band, so was he also contributing to those songs? You kind of have that perspective because you were around at that time too.
Yeah, I think with Vendetta, Dave was, with a lot of those songs too, was trying to, you know, not push it too far. I think as a band that with that release, we were trying to keep it somewhat grounded in what Throwdown was at the same time. And
Were there any songs on there that you felt you were particularly contributing to that you're like really proud of that you got to kind of get your riffs in on?
But like my favorite stuff on there to play was like Give My Life is really fun to play live. Speak the Truth. Discipline, I really love playing live. I really like that song. And Annihilation, even though we didn't play it very much, it was a slower. It was nice though in live sets. We played it on like maybe one or two headline tours, but it was fun to play to break up the speed of a lot of our songs, you know, where it was like, oh, it's kind of a nice break in some ways, you know, those mid-tempo kind of jams.
So on the Together Forever United DVD, Dave says that, you know, Throwdown will always be sand, straight edge in a song. The Go will be in the same spot. And then deliberately not done on the following record, Vendetta. But I know that Discipline is kind of, I mean, there's songs you could certainly interpret to have a straight edge message. So I'm not saying that isn't obvious to me. But as a straight edge person yourself, and again, a fan of the band, now you're a contributing member to the band. Did you feel like that was missing from Vendetta, like a straight edge anthem? Or did you feel like Discipline fit that slot?
Yeah, I wasn't really concerned with that. Obviously, I know other people were. Discipline feels pretty straight edge to me. So I was cool with that. And then, I mean, This Is Where It Ends is pretty straight edge. It's pretty gnarly. So I always felt like it was good. Like I didn't need to say straight edge. I mean, you got to remember too, like we're playing forever every night too. So like we're saying straight edge every night of our lives. Right, like in a live setting, so like it didn't feel like a big deal to me. Like, it was every, to me, saying straight edge or not doesn't mean the implication isn't there. Like the Discipline, I mean, to me, that is a straight edge song.
The album as a whole definitely feels a lot more, I want to say metal, but when I say metal, I don't mean like, you know, shredding guitar solos. Almost like Hatebreed is a metal band, or Earth Crisis is like a metal band. Both of those are also in the hardcore realm as well. But I guess metallic hardcore is a better description of it. And I think that lends itself to a lot of growth for making the album feel like a progression from Haymaker without it sounding like a radically different band. And I think that it's most prevalent in the opening song, We Will Rise, has, you know, that cool kind of lead on it that isn't, again, it's not, you know, some Kerry King solo or something right. like that, but it definitely right. has like a lead that, and that's something new for Throwdown, but it doesn't feel silly. It feels like, oh, cool, they added something to their arsenal. Was that something that you were kind of cognizant of with that song in particular?
Yeah. I mean, there's a few of those on the record, right? Like, I think Annihilation has one. A kind of a little lead part, and I think Discipline does too, if I remember. Yeah, they were new, and I mean, I remember at the time, like for me, those were challenging to play, right? Like those aren't complicated things, and obviously we got more technical on later records, especially like Venom and Tears got a little more. But Vendetta, yeah, at the time, I remember those little leads. I was like, especially when we were just like a four piece, I'm thinking like, how am I going to play this stuff live? You know,
right.
That stuff was cool to me. Like I mean. All of us like metal. So it wasn't like, and again, we were touring with so many metal bands at that point. I would say so many, but I mean, we did Ozfest, right? We became friends with Lamb of God. They took us on two different tours, US and UK. So obviously it's not like overtly, we sound like Lamb of God all of a sudden, but obviously that stuff, we love that band. And so it was like, how could that not, how could those things not influence you if you're around them all the time? You know what I'm saying? And we all liked metal, right? Like I know for me, Dave, especially like we liked metal when we were younger before we heard hardcore. Because that was more mainstream, that was more accessible. But Metallica, Megadeth, Pantera, those things for me came first.
Now the song Vendetta, like you mentioned earlier, the ending of that song is almost like, you know how when 18 Visions put out Obsession, people that were early into their earlier material kind of panned it, but the song Tower of Snakes has this insane breakdown. People are like, oh, the Tower of Snakes breakdown. Yeah. Vendetta is almost like that. Like, even if you don't think you like this album, the ending of Vendetta is just devastating. Like, you can't not think that that's sick. Yeah. So was that something that you were thinking of too? Is that why the album got named after that song? Or, you know, what came first, the song title, the album title?
I just know that original idea for that riff, I mean, I'm pretty sure I'm remembering this correctly, was on our European tour in 04, and I believe we were sound checking in Germany, and it was me and Ben messing around. Now, again, I say that, but like it of course evolved into like this more structured and like there's the different parts to it. But like that initial idea for that riff with like that double bass pattern came from us messing around. And so I don't think there was any intention of like, let's make this really sick part. It just was screwing around, which a lot of stuff comes that way, you know, a lot of riff ideas come that way. So, yeah, there was no, there was no initial intention.
Yeah. I just think that that's such a cool song and a you know, it's even kind of early on in the album too. So yeah. Even more surprising if you don't leave it for later, and it being the title track, you know, it kind of gives you a more of a focus on it too. But I know that you may not understand, or I shouldn't say understand, but be aware of the intention with the lyrics and the titles. But do you know where the artwork comes from with these praying hands?
I know that the guys that do Invisible Creature now, that was Asterix Studio at the time, that have done all the artwork for every Throwdown release since Haymaker. They did the artwork and the photography. And our friend Brandon is actually the guy that they used. He's the one in those pictures.
Oh, okay.
In the album. He's a friend of ours from Orange County. But yeah, Invisible Creature, which again at the time was Asterix, they did the artwork. The Clark brothers that were in Demon Hunter, and Ryan still is in Demon Hunter. But
well, what did Vendetta mean to you, whether it was that song or just that title? Did you feel like you were kind of up against the wall being the new guy in the band, or what did you take from it being called Vendetta and just, you know, your own individual interpretation?
Yeah, I think it was sort of a way to us trying to make a statement of like, hey, we're, you know, because at the time that felt really important, right? These member changes, they seem such a big deal at the time from where the band was and where it ended up going. And so I think for all of us, we felt like, yeah, we're getting a lot of crap and like, oh, what direction? And I think there was a lot, you know, at the time, a lot of people kind of like, where are they going to go? Like, what's the direction they're going to go? And so I think for us, it was like a statement of like, yeah, like we're still solid. We're still good. We're here. Like, this is going to be, you know, a good record and we feel it's good. And it's funny, 'cause like you said, a lot of people felt it was different at the time. But just like a lot of bands, I think in hindsight, a lot of people now say it's their favorite. Like, and I've heard that about Venom and Tears. I've heard that about Deathless. I've heard that about a lot of the records where it's like at the time it comes out, you know, a lot of people have this reaction to it. Ah, it's different. I don't like it. But then a lot of times, and I've seen that with other bands too over the years, it ends up becoming like a favorite of a lot of people, or in hindsight, right? Or with time, with age, you know?
We'll be back after a quick break.
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at RootsMusicRambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
Yeah, because all these things, you know, whether it's something that we love or don't like, it's a time and place thing, you know, and maybe at the time, Vendetta seemed so weird in the canon of Throwdown. But now looking back, it seems so commonplace compared to kind of what came after it. So,
right.
Well, I know, you know, going back to the lyrics, though, you know, a thing about Haymaker is that Dave was coming in as the vocalist from Keith. And a lot of those songs, like we talked about, were re-recordings of older songs, but the songs that Dave wrote the lyrics to, you know, were kind of simpler, you know, that they were a lot of profanity, a lot of straightforward, not a whole lot of nuance. I'm trying to think of a polite way to say they were kind of, you know, silly, but you know, the lyrics on Vendetta don't have that. Not to say he doesn't say profanity or whatever, but it never is like the bravado of like just saying bitch in the middle of a song. You know what I mean? It's much more focused. Do you remember that being something that he was focused on? He wanted to be kind of taken more seriously as a songwriter versus just a front man, or is that just,
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. We didn't have any direct conversations about that, but I think so. Yeah. I think all of us, you know, we're trying to go in a more serious direction as a band. Like, we became a full-time band finally after all those years. Right. And we're like, yeah, this is what we want to do. We wanted to do this for a living at the time. And so we wanted to be taken serious, you know, which is hard when your name's Throwdown, but we tried our best.
Well, you know, Throwdown's always seen as like, oh, you know, and this is what every band says when they're scared of what public opinion is going to be. Oh, we were a joke band. And, you know, but yeah. Throwdown doesn't sound like a silly name to me. I mean, maybe it was silly in the context. I know the lore of everyone was small and like they weren't really tough guys, but just the name Throwdown doesn't sound silly.
Yeah. It feels silly to say sometimes, but once we go, oh, what band were you in? And you say Throwdown, and you're like, oh, like, I don't know. I guess maybe because, again, being so close to it, it's hard to have an outside perspective, obviously. But you just see something like you say, like Toby Keith, you know, Throwdown tour, like, you know, have like, and you're like, that word gets used so much in like the fighting world and in like the country world. I feel like they use it a lot for some odd reason. I don't know why, but.
Well, the hoedown, throwdown, you got to have one.
I guess so. But yeah, so it feels sort of silly sometimes, but yeah.
You have a guest appearance by Howard Jones of Meat fame of the Killswitch Engage. And now he's in, not Devil, You Know What, is Light the Torch.
Yes.
He, of course, was in Blood Has Been Shed when he was featured on the 18 Visions album Vanity. But now he's in Killswitch Engage. And he, well, not now, but at the time of this album coming out, he's in Killswitch. Yep. So how did that collaboration happen? And did he actually come to the studio with Zeus to track the vocals?
Yeah, we... Yeah, at the time, that was kind of what you did, right? You had to have the person come in, I think. I guess some people were doing it remotely, but yeah, we had him come in because we were in Massachusetts with Zeus in Western Mass. I forget the town that he was in at the time, his studio, but yeah, we were friends with Howard, you know, from the Blood Has Been Shed days, and then obviously, yeah, he was in Killswitch, and we had him come into the studio and do vocals for that and hung out, and yeah, I was actually looking at photos because I have a bunch of photos from the recording. I got pictures of him eating a grinder in the studio with us, and then just us hanging out bullshitting, and then I got some shots of him doing the vocals and stuff. Yeah, so he came in and did that. I really wanted him to sing on the song. Obviously that wasn't going to happen on Vendetta, of course, and the song didn't really lend itself to that, but I just loved his singing voice so much. But yeah, he did the screams, but it was still rad, you know. His voice is so sick. You have everything.
Yeah. What a great vocalist and great frontman. And especially at that point, I mean, not to say anything about him now, but at that point, he's like on fire. He's really kind of coming to his own with Killswitch at the time. And so really cool to have him on here. And it's just it seems like a cool thing of mixing those worlds too, because Killswitch is firmly like in that metalcore, like mainstream world. Like they're a huge band in 05. And so you guys kind of coming up trying to take that next step and have him a part of it, I think is a very symbolic kind of thing.
Well, he would, I mean, like I said, we just benefited from already being friends with him, you know, right. And then he would, like, if he was around, like I think it was Ozfest, one of the Ozfest shows, or maybe more than one, he would come out and do vocals with Dave on stage.
Oh, wow.
So that was really cool at that time. That was 04, obviously, but yeah, he would come out when we were around. He did it in San Bernardino, the Southern California date, which is one of the biggest shows of that Ozfest. So he was a friend and was happy to do it.
Sean Martin of then Hatebreed fame also is on the album, not doing vocals though, right? Playing guitar.
F Sean Martin, dude. Yeah. he actually does do vocals on Shut You Down. It's in the parts. It's those like verse parts where it's like just a line, you know, those like he's in there, he's in the mix, but we also had him do guest pick slides.
Okay.
That's a little known fact. I think it's on Vendetta, the opening. If I remember correctly, I think it was the opening, you know, where the drum roll comes in. Because whenever, you know, we toured with them and like we would on stage, he was just so gnarly and his pick slides, we just thought they were so sick. And so, yeah, he came in, obviously he lived close. And I came in and just hung out for the day and did that.
God, that should have been on the hype sticker. Guest pick slides by Sean Martin.
I know. Missed opportunity.
Remember when that was like a big thing, those hype stickers, and then they would start being like too cute. They'd be like for fans of Britney Spears and Hatebreed, you know, and be like, they're really going for it.
Yeah. Yeah, we had those on our records for sure, the hype stickers.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I know hype stickers are even still a thing now. Just I remember there was a point in time where they became almost like a punchline versus a real marketing tool.
Yeah, to try to go the other way, and because they got too kind of too standard, I think. So people were trying to do something different. Yeah.
So the album ends with This Is Where It Ends, which is quite a departure from the rest of the album in the sense it's really fast, really short. You know, it's a really cool way to end the album too, especially with coming right after Annihilation, which feels kind of like a, like you even mentioned before, like a more slow trudging kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's a nice little climax into like the big finale. You know, the overall, the album is 11 tracks. Is there one song that you would take out of this album to make it flow better?
I don't think so.
Well, you have to pick one.
I have to?
Yeah, you have to take one out.
Well, I can't say World Behind because Howard sings on that one. And that's crucial.
We can move his vocals to another one.
I mean, can I say no?
Yeah, you can say no.
because I, like I said, I feel like we had no time to write extra songs. Whereas like with Venom and Tears, we did, you know, and so we weren't like, it was like, okay, we're trying to get to 11 songs or 10 or 11 songs. And it was like, we got it. And that was it. And so I feel like we didn't really have time to trim fat because I feel like there really wasn't any anyway. You know what I'm saying? We didn't, like I said, the bonus tracks for the Japanese Roadrunner release were live songs they recorded while we were there in Japan because we didn't have bonus tracks to give them. So they didn't exist, you know?
Well, the big single off the album that has the video is Burn, which is one of my favorite Throwdown songs. I mean, it's so catchy and heavy and really anthemic. You know, I mean, kind of builds off of what made Forever such a popular song. So I'm sure that was definitely, if not the idea, certainly a welcome side effect of it being such a cool song. But do you love Burn? Is this one of the hallmarks to the record for you?
I do like that song. I liked playing it live, and I think on that bonus DVD, I think I do say that was at the inception of that album, the beginning of that album when it was being released, that was my favorite at the time for sure. I think now Discipline's probably my favorite, but this many years later, but at the time, I think Burn at the time was like, yeah, that song made a lot of sense for us as a band, and I think it was just, yeah, it was a good live song, people liked it, it was good. Yeah, I liked it.
I remember the first time I heard Burn was when you actually toured this with Sounds of the Underground. Remember that tour?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Of course.
And how would you compare that to Ozfest? You know, you kind of bookend this album with these huge festival tours, Ozfest before it, Sounds of the Underground afterwards.
How would I compare? Well, Ozfest obviously already was a huge like machine, right? By the time we do it in 04, it's already... So it's way more, I don't want to say professional. That's not fair to the Sounds of the Underground people, but it's, you know, like I said, it's run by the Osbournes. So it's a big tour and there's huge bands on it. And we felt obviously just like lucky to even be on it. And even though Ozfest in 04 had a lot of our friends' bands on it and peers that we already had known and toured with, obviously Every Time I Die, you know, Bleeding Through, all those bands that we already knew and had toured with. Sounds of the Underground was sort of similar in that sense, except it felt more like a DIY festival in a sense that Lamb of God was the headliner, but we had already become friends with them, right? We already knew them. And then it was like, we were sharing a bus on that tour with Norma Jean, who we already had become friends with from touring with them in 04. It was a lot of it was like this, a lot of the same bands, you know, because Ozfest wouldn't do a lot of bands 2 years in a row. Yeah, I mean, Sounds of the Underground was different, but it was just, I mean, it was still really a really fun tour. Really cool, and it was just hanging out with a lot of friends again. And we got to tour with Gwar, which was always a dream of mine from a young age, you know. Finally got to do that, so that was cool. And we met, you know, we got introduced to Strapping Young Lad, which was cool. We ended up touring with them in the UK later, sharing a bus with them over there.
So, of course, the a bigger part of Vendetta is what comes after it, which is Venom and Tears. And what is something about Vendetta that you like more than Venom and Tears?
I would say that I felt less pressure making Vendetta than we did once we got to Venom and Tears. Like Venom and Tears, to me, I remember that whole writing and recording process being pretty anxious and worried about how it was going to be received, but also not caring too, because like, we wanted to do what we wanted to do. And we didn't always see eye to eye as a band either, of course. I think at that point, me and Dave were probably more aligned with where we wanted to go than like Ben and Mark. And so there was some tension there, but I think a lot of that made songs come out really cool too. But we had a lot of time on that record too. That's the other thing that was very different for us. So, you know, Vendetta was this sort of urgent, sort of like we had a month to write it. We had 3 weeks to record it. And then we're back on the road. Whereas Vendetta, we had months, like a lot of months. And then we had multiple months to record it, right? It was like we had almost a year off between the writing and recording of that record. So that was new and different for us, which was cool. It also made me sort of realize that I don't want to tour anymore. So I really like, I like being home. I like going to the studio. I like doing that aspect of it a lot more than the slog of the road every day. So that was sort of the initial seeds, I think, for me of like, I don't want to tour anymore, was doing that record. But Vendetta was probably just more fun in general, just because, like I said, it was quick. We didn't have a lot of time to overthink things, and we just did it. You know, we just boom, boom, banged out songs and recorded it. And again, it was my first sort of bigger experience with a producer per se. And Zeus is a producer. And now he's gone on to do even, you know, obviously way bigger things. He's doing Queensryche and does movie scores and Rob Zombie albums. And so that's really cool. Yeah. But at the time, you know, he had done, you know, Hatebreed, Shadows Fall, stuff that, you know, guys we knew and bands we liked. So it made sense to go there, and we loved his recording. So that was, it was just a fun experience, you know?
What would you say the biggest difference is between working with Zeus on Vendetta and working with Mudrock on Venom and Tears?
I think the biggest difference that stands out off the top of my head is that Zeus sort of knew our world, right? Like he comes from our world, essentially. He knows Hatebreed, knows that world. And Mudrock was more of a mainstream producer, I guess. You know, he he's known for Godsmack and then Avenged Sevenfold. And, you know, obviously they needed 18 Visions. He started doing more underground bands that became bigger. But I think even that, even us choosing him sort of made fans think differently of us, right? Because, you know, when those press releases come out and it's like, Throwdown choose Mudrock to do their next record. And then in the parentheses, it says Godsmack and Avenged Sevenfold. Then people start going, oh, you guys are going to sound like Godsmack, you know, and that becomes a thing. And it's like, well, just because the guy produced them, you know, I remember that always being a thing. I'm like, I never understood the Godsmack comparisons, but.
Maybe they meant the drumming was sick, like Shannon Larkin. So they were like, it sounds just like Godsmack.
Yeah. But I think people see the name associated with a producer and go, oh, that's, you know, I think that just sticks in people's heads. But yeah, I just think that Zeus understands the type, like what we're going for more than like maybe Mudrock did at the time.
Is that almost maybe why Mudrock would have been the right choice for it? Because it is kind of, you guys were going in a different direction and he's from a different world.
Yeah, I think so. I think that was at the time we're thinking like, oh, and again, like we're good friends with 18 Visions. You know, we're still sharing a practice space with them at this time. And it was like, they had recorded with him. Right. And so we're like, oh, and he had done some other stuff with some other friends of ours. And so we started developing a relationship with him. And then actually the way that started was we needed to record. I don't even remember why, but we needed to record a couple cover songs. They ended up becoming bonus tracks on Venom and Tears, but it was Planets Collide by Crowbar. And then the London Dungeon by Misfits. And we were like, we went in and recorded those two with him, like in a summer in between tours. And that was sort of like, hey, let's go do this with him and see how it vibes. So we went and recorded those. And then we're like, yeah, it was cool. And we liked the way those turned out. And we actually feel like those might've turned out better than the way the final mix of the album did later on.
Was there any point when you're doing Venom and Tears or even writing Venom and Tears where people start to tell you about, like, you know, you're talking about these comparisons that you were getting, but that's after the fact, that's after it already exists. Yeah. Did you have, you know, peers or management or Mudrock or whoever saying like, oh, you know, this kind of sounds like something else, sounds like a more, you know, metal band or anything like that? Or
no, when we would write albums, we were pretty self-contained. Like no one was really hearing it. Like we were in our practice space. We weren't we weren't demoing songs with Mudrock. We weren't doing any of that. I was recording them on my laptop, right? Like on, like just opening up GarageBand and open in this single track, recording them so we could have them overnight and listen to them for each day coming back and figuring out what we're going to do. Just recording, you know, a live room sound. That's it. We weren't demoing songs with anybody. We weren't showing them to the label. We weren't doing any of that. You know, it was just very self-contained. The only struggle we had was within ourselves of like somebody saying, well, that's to this or that's to that, right? Within the band. And I mean, I had some demos even for Venom and Tears that were like, yeah, we can't use these. You know, they were like too far in a direction that, you know what I mean? That would have been, I don't know. Like one, there was one, I remember one that had a very sort of kind of Southern kind of rock riff to it. And it was like, yeah, we didn't feel, which, you know, I ended up, that kind of stuff kind of happened more on Deathless, which I wasn't a part of. But yeah, there's some songs that got thrown out in the practice space essentially before they even got. And then there's some that we started recording with Mudrock that never got finished either. Never got to the vocal part, you know, the vocal stage or whatever, that just felt like they just weren't going to work. Or,
well, looking back on your time with Rodon, I know that we kind of covered it from the beginning to the end because you end up leaving after Venom and Tears. But with Vendetta, with it being your first album, you know, I know that you had already been playing with the band for a couple of years and the excitement of it and everything. What's a favorite memory of this period of time in your life that you look back on very fondly and you're excited to have been a part of?
Ozfest, for sure. I think that's a favorite memory for like everyone that did it. The first time I went to Japan, of course, was great. That whole period was really fun. But then probably one of my favorite memories ever is we played Okinawa. And I remember at the time, you know, the people telling us we were there, like, bands don't come here. You know, it's very rare for a band to come to Okinawa. And we played this show in this like basement. And Okinawa, I don't know if you know, but like there's a lot of military bases on that island. So a lot of like people, military, a lot of them were Americans that end up coming to the show. Whereas like a lot of the other shows in Japan, it's mostly, you know, Japanese people. So like this was, it was cool because you're like, oh, we're getting like some people that like know us and they're military guys or whatever. And it was in this basement and we were playing, we had practice amps. I mean, this is like, I mean, it was, and I remember it being one of the most uncomfortable, hottest, sweatiest, just like the, I couldn't hear, none of us could hear anything. All you hear is cymbals, right? You couldn't hear the vote. I mean, it was like the most just ghetto show, but I remember that as being like one of the funnest at the same time, right? Like, just that like intense and just kind of remembering like why you're doing it, like the punk rockness of it. Like, just, it doesn't matter if you have good equipment or, you know, whether it's a big show or not, which those big shows are fun, but like those real small, intimate, just sweaty, disgusting punk shows were like, are so fun. And that's like why that's how we started, you know, playing music, any of us, you know, that's like, for me, that's fun. That's like I brought it back to like that fun aspect of it where it didn't matter if I could hear my guitar, right? People love, I mean, those people have the best memory their whole life that like they got to go to the show and experience that. And it was so much fun. And I remember it vividly. And I don't remember a lot of shows, you know, because you play so many over the years, but that one I specifically remember. And that was really, that's a standout for me. I mean, the whole thing felt really cool because it felt like the band was ascending. You know, you felt it. This is where it fucking is. This is where it is.
Yeah, this is where it fucking is. Praying hands and thanks to Matt for sharing these stories with us, and crossed arms on my chest for him keeping the straight edge after all these years. You can follow Throwdown on Instagram at Throwdown Music for pictures and posts about their legacy, including but not limited to Vendetta. Thanks for hanging out on another edition of Living with a Pod Complex. More to come every time I do them. I'm Ryan Rainbow. This is Meet Meep. And yes, that's the best that I can come up with. Bye!